The U.S. Congress has approved a bill that will substantially change what it is to fly around these United States. The Aviation Security Bill puts airport security under federal control just before holiday travels. Of course, we're going to talk about this as much continues to move on the ground in southern Afghanistan, where the Taliban continues to be in retreat. Dan Shore joins us. Good morning, Dan.
Hi, Scott.
The significance of this aviation security bill, let me ask, goes beyond what's written on paper?
Well, I think so. I think it is profoundly significant in its way. The airport security bill, which had been passed by the Senate 100-0 to provide a federal force, bogged down in the House over Republican objections to expanding the federal government with a force of 28,000 security people. Mm-hmm. And then for once, the American people rose up in their wrath and said, listen, don't tell us you don't like the federal government. We like the federal government. And if 2 months after September 11, you can't give us any better airport security than the cheapo private companies, what do we elect you for? So guess what? The House Republicans saw some very angry writing on the wall. They deserted their anti-federal ideology. They deserted some of the lobbyists who had given a lot of campaign contributions, and they caved. It doesn't happen very often, so mark the moment, right? This is only the beginning. It may be this will go further. There are appropriations bills where there's still a lot of pork barrel as usual. Maybe some voters are tempted to say, don't you know there's a war on? The next big test may well be the so-called stimulus bill to help restore consumer and business confidence. That is locked up in a partisan struggle, mainly over, if I can put it this way, on whether you cut taxes for the wealthiest or increase spending for the neediest. But unless there is a sudden burst of wartime bipartisanship, it's going to be months before any program, if they reach a program, can be effective. So what's happening to the economy will go on happening for a while. Welcome to Congress at War.
Right. Well, let me ask you about a wartime decision that was reached this week. Attorney General John Ashcroft has said that number of people who might be apprehended as the result of the war in Afghanistan or the war against terrorism could be tried in military tribunals.
Yeah.
What's the thinking behind that?
Well, we've had military tribunals on fairly rare occasions in the past. I can still remember that President Franklin Roosevelt had one for Nazi spies who had landed on our coast from submarines. Mm-hmm. And the rationale now seems to be, according to Attorney General Ashcroft, is that we may have to use evidence that we can't make public. Now, I have a purely private suspicion, which I cannot support, prove, or anything else, that in the nightmares that Ashcroft dreams at night, Osama bin Laden surrenders and says, put me on trial in federal district court so I can lecture to the infidels. Yeah. And I think that is something that he would dearly, dearly like to avoid. And I think that may well be one of the reasons why I say, listen, if and when we get Osama bin Laden and whatever, whoever is still alive for the people who work for him, we may want to do that in a military court in private and not give all that attention to him and give him this great tribunal and this great forum.
Well, let me intervene. Is it possible to put a what has been kept as a secret network of conspirators,
yeah,
undertaking acts of terrorism on trial without giving away many of the secrets you've done undone and the process you've used to find and track down these people?
Well, the answer to that is simply yes. There have been trials before, of especially from the embassy bombings, in which they said certain information will be given to the court but will be kept secret. Mm-hmm. And they've managed to do that. There are ways of keeping information secret that have to be used during trials. It's complicated, but it can be done. But, you know, I think this is one of a whole series of administration moves to give itself better control of what's going on in this investigation, sometimes at the expense of civil liberties. You know, we heard that they claim the right now to wiretap conversations between some prisoners and their lawyers. They will not disclose how many people are being detained, something between 1,000 and 5,000, and how many have been charged and charged with what. You know, at some point, it seems to me, the United States will have to convince the world, especially the Islamic world, mm-hmm, that we dispense justice. And whatever it is that our Justice Department is up to, the question is whether that will be perceived when the time comes as justice.
Let's move to events on the ground in Afghanistan, because the war has progressed a good deal more quickly than I think we would have guessed sitting here a week, and then we did guess, it must be frank, than we acknowledge a week or two.
Break in here to say that I think it was last week that I used the word quagmire in our discussion.
You were speaking of something else, I'm sure.
It looked very much like quagmire, and so I said, if it looks like quagmire, let's call it quagmire. And then the Taliban embarrassed me on Monday by suddenly pulling out of Kabul.
They're ruthless.
And that was it. And they will do anything to embarrass me. And then, of course, it no longer looked like quagmire at all. What's happened now is that the United States, which has been pressing the Northern Alliance not to move into Kabul before there can be a broad-based government, so-called, has given up and says, listen, there's a vacuum of power. The Northern Alliance is inexorably pulled into the vacuum of power for all practical purposes. The Northern Alliance is the government of Afghanistan. Reports now that the Taliban is also going to leave its stronghold of Kandahar in some kind of a deal for a safe exit with friendly Pashtun tribes. And if anybody ever used the word quagmire, that word should now be denounced and stored away.
I guess those are unconfirmed reports about advancing on Kandahar, we should note, but certainly the trend seems to be clear. The former president of Afghanistan, President Rabbani, has returned to Kabul, and he's indicated he wants to put together a mixed ticket, as we would say in the United States.
Well, starting with Pakistan, which really doesn't like the Northern Alliance very much, everybody would like to see a broad-based government. And what may result from that is not so much as broad-based central government as merely more confederation than giving a lot of more local autonomy and having a weak government in Kabul. They've in the past tried to go for very strong central governments. What may happen now is to say the way that you can get diversity is not to have a strong central government at all.
Quick question. The British forces have the airport. There's some Americans there. Some French soldiers are coming in. United Nations has promised a team on the ground. Could we confront a circumstance where people who had been aiding the Northern Alliance are now going to be saying, not too fast, fellas, don't put this government together quite yet, it needs our imprimatur?
Well, but there is a government in effect there. The Northern Alliance has moved into the ministries and taken over the ministerial office. And if there's anything like a government, we can make plans of all sorts, coalitions, alliances of all kinds, and in the end, the people decide. And events are much more in the saddle than we are in the saddle now. And I'm not sure we can govern what happens.
Let me ask you this. President Bush held a 3-day summit meeting with President Putin of Russia this week, and President Putin of Russia also had a summit meeting with Robert Siegel and some callers on National Public Radio. How did the President Putin, that is, acquit himself before
I think
this
the
new
Siegel
audience?
Summit was probably more successful than the Bush summit, if I may say so.
Yes.
Because aside from there were a lot of style, not much substance. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is that on the main issues that divide them, this whole question of the anti-ballistic missile treaty, they're still far apart, on reducing nuclear weapons. The president says, we can do it, just say we'll do it, we don't need anything in writing. Putin says, what do you mean we don't need anything in writing? Of course we need something in writing. What happens, who's going to be the next president? And is he going to be willing to go along with whatever it is that you decide that you're going to do? President, of course, doesn't want anything he has to submit to the Senate, and so there they are, still very much divided on a main issue, but very, very friendly.
Okay. Thanks very much, Dan Shore.
Yep.